Where is the anger? Where is the rage?
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. Welcome to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Little Beirut, Portland of Oregon. We are Northwest Veterans for Peace. I'm Bill, and here with me is Marvin.
Hello.
And Mr. John.
Good morning.
Today we're going to be speaking with Stacy Mullins of Optimize Me Now about post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. But first, we have a few things to take care of.
Yeah, that song is by Pat Scanlon off of an album that was given to us, I don't know how many years ago. He's a Vietnam vet. And I thought today would be a good day to start with that, since it is the anniversary of the attack on the sovereign state of Iraq that didn't need to happen. There's going to be Afghanistan, people, land, war, peace, focus on women of Afghanistan. It's by Chapter 72, presents Dana Visali, unembedded reporter returning from Afghanistan with report back. And that's going to be, let's see here, Monday, March 22nd at Multnomah Friends Meeting House. And that's at 4312 Southeast Stark Street here in Portland. And they're going to start with a potluck at 6 p.m. And the program will begin at 7 p.m. And if you need information about that, well, it just says here you can call, email them if you need more. And it's jenica5525@comcast.net. And that's Monday the 22nd, Afghanistan, people, land, war, peace, focus on women of Afghanistan. Jenica, J-E-N-I-K-A, 5525@comcast.net. And the flyer is a really good flyer. It's the picture of the young Afghan woman, you know, with the really blue-green eyes.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. What a wonderful photograph that is.
Yeah. They went back. They found her.
I understand that. Yeah.
And also on Friday, Saturday, Iraqi 7 years later, change U.S. foreign policy, bring all the troops home, rally, march, and peace, teach-in. In the occupation of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine, stop the expanding attacks in the Middle East, no drone strikes in Pakistan, no war on Iran, U.S. out of Latin America. Saturday, March 20th, rally Terry Shrunk Plaza, Southwest 3rd and Madison, and that starts at 12 noon. And then the teach-in is at the First Unitarian Church, Southwest 12th and Main, and that starts at 1 p.m. And if you need more information, this is coordinated by Peace and Justice Works Iraqi Affinity Group. And if you need some more information on that, you can give them a call, since it's tomorrow, 503-236-3065, and that's Saturday, March 20th. And I'm going to go, I think I'm going to walk with WILF.
Yeah.
International League for Peace and Freedom. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I'm going to carry our banner that we had. Don Mills made it, and it's the MIA Missing in America banner, the one that got us kicked out of the Albany parade.
Oh, well, they tried to throw us out, yeah.
And I'm gonna carry that, you know, and I'm going to walk with my sisters.
You got that out there?
I've got it at my house.
Oh, good. Yeah, I keep wondering where that was.
Yeah, I got it. And so, you know, the sovereign nation of Iraq was attacked by us, you know, no provocation, no reason to attack that poor country. And look at all the pain and misery that's caused in 7 years. And before that, they had sanctions. And if I remember right, Madeleine, I'm a war criminal, Albright, said it was okay to kill, 100,000 children under the age of six? You know, that the government thought that was okay. And here she's going around the world being this great diplomat. And she was the one who was,
the angel of death.
Yes, she is. Also, the sexual attacks in the military have gone up, you know, which is the Department of Defense just released a report showing an 11% increase in reports of sexual assault in the military over last year, including 16% increase in reported assaults occurring in combat areas, particularly Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, how we've been saying that since we started going in 1991,
right,
that these young women in the military are being abused by their own compatriots.
Yeah.
In Iraq, in Afghanistan, boy, it's even worse in overseas. So it says, of all assaults, a vast majority, 87%, were male on female, while 7% were male on male. The typical case was an assault by an 18 to 25 year old general. Assault by an 18 to 25 year old junior enlisted service member on a woman, and alcohol was involved.
Surprise,
yeah,
surprise.
Alcohol was involved. The other night I met with Bud Brown and Joe Lewis. Joe Lewis was our good friend Joe Lewis. Bud Brown's a non-vet. He's a professor down at Western Oregon University. He's, boy, really very, very active. He works a lot with the veterans in criminal matters, such as murder cases.
Yes.
And he's very active in that. And at that meeting was Joe Lewis, the Gulf War. He's a Kent State guy who was shot at Kent State. He was there. The dean of the social science department was there. His wife, she was a UPI reporter for a while. Now she doesn't have a job. And Mike Hasty was there. And we talked a lot about a lot of different things. And one of the things that Bud told me was that the Oregon National Guard's going to be coming home pretty soon. And he was saying that 52% of all the troopers coming home don't have jobs waiting for them. And he said that percentage even goes up higher if the ones who think they might have a job but aren't sure, coming home, they're not sure they have a job. So that's even higher. And Bud was talking about, the cases that he has with returning veterans, and they're going to start he's going to start a class this fall down in at Western Oregon University. Which only returning veterans can get in that have been deployed. And they go into this class, and he's going to, teach them how to assimilate back into to going to school.
Yeah.
And so there'll be, all these great classes that he's going to be helping them with, and which I think is a great deal, a great thing. Because I remember when I came back, I didn't start college until a few years after I'd got back, because there's just no way I could have done it. I was just too nuts. And we were talking about a couple things on veterans and the law. And he was saying that one thing has been changing lately. He said that these guys that commit these murders used to be just sent to prison for murder, plain out murder. They wouldn't let any kind of a defense for post-traumatic stress disorder to be used at all. And he said he's noticed that things have changed some, that he here in Oregon was one, and California was one, a couple other places where the jury says, yes, they did that they did commit the murder, but this circumstance was part of it. And so it was like temporary insanity due to post-traumatic stress disorder or something else, where that they were convicted of the murder because they did do the murder, but they weren't given this instant death penalty, you know, sentence.
Yeah.
Where they brought this in, which was very helpful to them, which is good. And also, I was asking Bud about how many women are in prison, veterans, returning veterans, women veterans are in prison.
Yeah.
He says they don't know. He says they really, they don't keep count of even of the men, you know, in the prisons. You know, and especially women for murder, they don't have anything on that. And one of the highest homeless rates we know of is veterans, like 33% of all homeless are veterans. And of that, women are really becoming a real, real high percentage. And of the women homeless, they're usually single mothers. Single mothers.
Yeah.
You know, homeless single mother, Afghan and Iraqi mothers right now that are becoming homeless, which is, you know, a pretty sad thing. And we also talked to Joe Lewis, and Joe Lewis has invited us to go back to Kent State because May will be the 40th anniversary of the murdering of the four students at Kent State and the wounding of 13 others.
Yeah.
And he's invited us to go back with him where, he's one of them. Joe was like the first one they shot.
Yeah.
He was in the front, very front. He was the first one they shot. And I'm thinking about going back.
He was going the other way, though, wasn't he?
No, he was standing up there. He said he was standing there, you know, he thought, he looked around, there was nobody around him, everybody else had taken off. And he was standing there, and they shot him. He shot him through the hip and then through the leg. And so, you know, the 40th anniversary is coming up. And also, Laurel wanted to thank the women who have called her about her class, Women in War, out at Pacific University. She wants to thank the women who have called. And she also wants to invite, now she's getting into the Iraq and Afghanistan, and she wants to talk to some women, some more women who served in Iraq and who served in Afghanistan. So if you if you want to give her a call, she'd really like to talk to you because the Women in War class is really doing good, and it's the first she's taught it. So if you want to call Laurel, you can call her at her office, and it's 503-352-2801. And if you know of a veteran, if your daughter's a veteran or your niece or whatever, if you give Laurel a call, that would be good too. And Laurel, you know, can work with that way. But she's now doing Iraq and Afghanistan, and so she wants to talk to more women that served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So that would be good to do that. That's really a good class.
This is Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM, and I'm John with Marv and Bill. And we're going to be talking with Stacy Mullins on PTSD, an innovative approach. We thank you for joining us in this conversation.
I want to read a post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a severe anxiety disorder that can develop after exposure to any event which results in psychological trauma. This event may involve the threat of death to oneself or someone else, or to one's own or someone else's physical, sexual, or psychological integrity. So that's your basic definition of post-traumatic stress disorder. And last month, we got a phone call from one of our listeners that talked to us about a program that she thought would be interesting for veterans to hear about and to talk about, and that is a program that I called the number that they gave us, and it's called Optimize Me Now, and Stacy Mullins is the woman that I talked to, And we were interested into knowing what this program's about and how it works and how it got started and just about the program because, you know, three of us guys sitting at this table, we all have PTSD. And all the veterans I know have PTSD. And Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we were first thing we'd like to talk to you about is can you give us a little on your background before we start?
Sure. How I got into doing the brain training is I actually sought it out as a client. I had chronic pain from a high-speed rollover car accident about 15 years ago, neck and shoulder pain and injury. Headaches and chronic pain for all that time. Had also had the diagnosis of PTSD. Turns out you don't have to go to a war zone to get
PTSD. No, you don't.
And depression and, you know, all the things that go with it. And I discovered this through a long search of different modalities and experienced it as a client and then knew that this is something I wanted to do to bring this to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, my background was in psychology and organizational development, training and development sorts of things, and kind of a systemic approach to pretty much anything I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that really attracted me to this modality is it's a systemic approach, it's a holistic approach. It treats the whole person as opposed to, you know, looking at a problem through a keyhole. It recognizes that people are individuals, and all of those things are consistent with my training and background and how I like to approach things.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Can you tell us a little, the brain training, that was really interesting to me. It's called Brain State
Technology.
Yeah,
company in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Gerdes is the developer and of the software and CEO of Brain State Tech. He's been developing it for about 8 or 9 years at this point. He also PTSD is in his history as well. He had an assault that took place with four youths, one wielding a baseball bat.
Wow.
And he basically wanted to solve his own problem as well. That's how a lot of innovative solutions come about. And he had done neurofeedback, biofeedback kinds of things, which were, he found somewhat helpful. He had a computer background as well and logarithms and trying to, you know, deal with patterns and things like that. So he basically started looking at his brain with EEG sensors, trying to see what it looked like when he felt good, what it looked like when he felt bad, and comparing patterns. And that's sort of how he stumbled onto what ended up becoming a way for him to actually see his brain to see itself as in a mirror. And that's different from a normal neurofeedback or biofeedback model.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't depend on the conscious brain needing to interact with the software. It's not performance-based, and you're trying to make your brain do something. Your brain can do what it needs to do as soon as it sees itself doing it wrong or doing it in an unbalanced fashion. And the way that the feedback mechanism works is the brain speaks in a language of frequencies, electrical impulse frequencies. And what he was doing is measuring the frequencies with the EEG sensors that was going into an amplifier and into a computer and then fed back to him in the form of sound frequencies that match. So that's how he was able to actually, his brain was able to see itself. Was it recognized those frequencies?
So how did he get from doing that to saying that this would be a good program for war veterans?
Okay, they've actually done you know, I think she said the other day up to about 100 vets there in the facility in Arizona. Now there's affiliate offices all over in 12 countries, and, you know, there's 100 and something of offices. And so all of them have done different amounts of that kind of work. So let's talk a little bit about kind of what trauma is for the brain. And I'm going to relate as much of this as I can to the military audience.
Sure.
So, like, when you signed up to become a soldier, you went to boot camp, and they trained you to be a good soldier by playing war games or getting into flight simulators or tank simulators and practicing firing range. So brain training is like simulation exercises for your brain to learn to perform in its optimal state. But when we have combat vets that are coming home with PTSD and traumatic brain injury and all of those sorts of symptoms, that begs the question, how come my military service, after that, my brain's not performing anything close to its optimal state? What happened to the person I was before? So now we're going to talk about kind of the brain's response to trauma, how the brain responds to a traumatic event that happens. And you defined it very well. A trauma is anything the brain interprets as a threat to its survival.
Mm-hmm.
So probably most of us are familiar with the idea that a brain is a bundle of nerve fibers that we might say are like a system of roads that information travels along. So we have all different kinds and sizes of roads, from interstate freeways to farm-to-market roads to residential streets, and there's different sizes of nerve fibers that transport different amounts of information. So a trauma could be looked at as a large town that springs up overnight at the intersection of two farm-to-market roads. Now, what would that look like? You'd have all of these businesses, shops, restaurants, hotels, houses at this little tiny intersection this huge town would spring up around. So what's the traffic pattern going to look like? It's going to be congested. It's going to be, you know, everyone that comes through there has to go through the town. So what do? They build a bypass around the town.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this does, essentially, is a nerve, a bundle of nerve fibers that we call a trauma pattern. And then what brain training does is it actually builds a new road around that trauma pattern so that rather than everything that you do having to go through that trauma pattern, you simply go around it.
Hmm. That's interesting.
You don't forget it. It's not gone. It's still there. You just don't have to go through the town all the time.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And so when keep going on that. How's that working?
Okay. What vets are experiencing and other people who do the brain training who have PTSD and those types of symptoms, it's not where they have to try and effort their way out of not feeling bad. When you take the brainwave patterns in the brain and you optimize them so that they function as well as they can, then all of those symptoms, conditions, behaviors that were in place as a result of those brainwave patterns being out of balance, they go away because they're only there to hold the imbalance in place, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so people experience not getting angry when they would have gotten angry if that was one of their issues. But they don't experience it like, okay, I'm not going to get angry this time. It's not about willpower. They simply experience what would have made them angry, and instead of their brain going down that road, it has another road now, and it goes down the other road because it actually feels better to go down the other road.
Yeah, for sure.
And then after they're a few miles down that road, they go, oh, look at there. I didn't get angry.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember that I would have really gone off on that guy that pulled out in front of me or whatever, made that comment. I would have just gone off on him, and instead, it just blows off. It doesn't matter. They drop it. It doesn't, there's no, the road to pursue that energy isn't there anymore.
How is there a? I like that. I like that idea of that. But I'm trying to figure out how. Is there?
how do you, Bill, help me here.
Well, the question I would ask is, when you're born, the brain has a certain wave or electrical patterns or connections, mm-hmm. and anything that happens untoward rewires the brain and changes the pathways that mm-hmm. the synapses or whatever the right. term is take. And so is it nature or nurture, I guess?
And, Stacy, we want you to answer that. We just want to let our listeners know that you're listening to Veterans Voice on KBO 90.7 FM in Portland. This is John, and Mr. Bill is here, and Marvin's here, and our pleasure is to have Stacy Mullins with us talking about PTSD. And so, Stacy, thank you, and go ahead.
Sure. It's really important, I think, to remember, we kind of know this, but we forget that the brain is really in charge of everything in our body. You know, that's where all the signals come from to do all of the procedures we do, from our gross motor movements to chemicals that our body produces to digestion, sleep patterns. It's all controlled by the brain. And the signals that the brain sends out to the rest of its own self and functioning and the rest of the body, if those signals are off in some way, then so will our function be. And by off, I mean that the brainwave patterns are not functioning the way that they need to, like a heart rhythm. You know, there's a certain rhythm that the heart has, there's a certain rhythm that the brain has, and if that rhythm is messed up through some event, then the result is the signals that it sends out aren't going to be very good either. So when you're experiencing problems on your computer and you run a defrag program or something like that, you get some sort of diagnostic software in there. You know, you do something to get the generator of the signals to be generating good signals. Rest of it all works better.
Is it akin to what yogis do? They can control their breathing rate and their heart rate and their blood pressure and
In a way, yeah, because what someone that has done meditation for 40 years can do with their brain is they have a lot of flexibility. They are in charge of their brain. They can make their brain do what they want to do. If they want to sleep right now, their brain does sleep pattern. If they want to do highly intelligent, focused problem solving, that's what they do. Well, how does that work for most of us? Most of us, we want to go to sleep right now. We can't go to sleep right now. Our brain is too wired and going, so we read a book or something like that. Well, that's a workaround, essentially. So we've trained our brain to go to sleep by going to a task. Now, does that sound like how we should be doing that?
Is this more in the line of brain training as opposed to actually altering the brain? You're training the brain? Would that be accurate?
It's both. Training the brain does end up altering the brain because it actually does build new neural net pathways, new roads, and as opposed to continuing to go down the same road. And chronic pain is like that. That's how chronic pain works. It's a road that got traveled so extensively that it became very well-traveled, very rutted. And what this does is it builds a road, an alternate road, so that the chronic pain signal doesn't have such an easy time of it anymore, and it has a different way to go. That way the brain doesn't automatically continue to register something just because it's the way it's always done it. We get really stuck in patterns, and it doesn't matter how bad you don't want to do a habit over again. If it's a rutted road, it's going to be really hard for you to will your way out of it.
I related to when you said, Stacy, about in the military training, mm-hmm. where they would do repetitive acts and in training us so that we would have an automatic response if we were in
a certain situation in combat.
Right.
And one of the instincts, for example, was a verbal as well as a physical action, where with your weapon, you would verbally cry out, kill, I want to kill, I want to, that type of thing, and then have also a physical response with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember fighting that mentally the whole time, saying, mm-hmm. no, that's not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what they were conditioning for. So is there a physical that goes along with verbal, a combination of things?
Well, for the person that's having the sessions, they're actually they have the easiest time of it. They're sitting in a comfortable chair for about an hour and a half at a time, and they have the sensors, the EEG sensors on their scalp. They have the earphones so they can hear the sound, and they relax with their eyes closed during most of it, and then sometimes they'll have exercises with eyes open. And there's different protocols that are run to do different things. But their conscious mind, they don't have to do anything to interact with the software. It works on the level below that. And so there's not a physical component where they need to do something while they're doing the training. The brain is doing that all by itself. There'll be physical sensations that a person can experience. They'll have traumas to the body that will be released. You'll have little twitches or little things that will happen where you know that, some pattern that was entrenched in your knee from that old football injury or something, you'll feel that. You felt it on the way in, you'll feel it on the way out. So you can actually feel releases happen throughout your body, different things. When I was doing it, I had this little heat sensation that would come right on my knee, and I told the trainer about it, and she said, yeah, that's, some sort of release that's happening, and it did it a couple of times, and then it was gone, and there it was, and it was just a pattern that my body was holding on to, and when it had the information it needed to be able to let go of that, it did.
I once read that anesthetic given to a person, general anesthetic, when he or she is going to be operated on and going to be cut open,
mm-hmm.
that the anesthetic just eliminates or erases that part of their memory. And so regarding how long the operation takes, that part of their memory is not functioning, and that is the reason they don't sense any pain or feel any pain. Is that akin to what's going on here?
Not really. Basically, like with pain or something, the signal that has rutted its pathway so deeply that it simply travels that, whether it needs to or not. Like there's no injury still, in a phantom limb situation, but you still feel the pain. The limb's not even there, but you still feel the pain. Well, how could that be? Obviously, the signal is not being fed from a physical source. It's an electrical impulse. It's essentially like a light switch that you left on. And so what this does is it simply turns off that switch.
Yeah. I was curious about the severity of the experience. We're all a bundle of our past experiences, as I understand it, and the severity of the insult to the system, does that determine how deep rooted or deep seated that it is?
It definitely can. Time will determine how deeply rooted something is. Childhood sexual abuse is a very deep-rooted type of trauma. A PTSD situation that was not maybe just a single event. It was multiple events over a period of time, which often is the case with combat. situations. It's not that one event. It was several events. So years of time layering over something will have that impact, and different people will require different numbers of sessions. We do like an intensive, what we call an intensive, which is 10 sessions, and that's kind of the basic where we start with everyone. Different types of issues sometimes will resolve quicker, sometimes they'll resolve later. We generally say that people will start feeling changes within 1 to 3 sessions, and it'll take 5 to 30 sessions for them to have those changes become permanent.
Is there any physical requirements, or pardon me, are there any physical requirements, and is there any touching or
any intrusive?
Yeah.
Right. Good question. It is non-invasive. The person is just sitting in the chair, and the sensors are placed at different places on their scalp. So that's the only contact. There's no talk therapy part of it. There's no need to go into what your situation is, what your trauma was, what your combat experience, none of that. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
Talking about it, in fact, and this is one reason why a lot of people don't want to do talk therapy and don't want to go back over that thing again and again and again, is it essentially is like a chronic pain rut at that point. You're just digging the rut deeper and deeper every time you go over it. And so we don't recommend actually digging the rut any deeper. And it's not necessary. Your conscious mind isn't where the solution will be found for those trauma patterns. It's not about your conscious mind. It's not about you trying to figure your way out of the foxhole. It's not about you trying to rationalize yourself out of the way you feel about what happened.
Or to keep yourself alive.
Or to keep yourself alive, exactly. And your automatic processes in your brain and body are there for a reason. They are what kept you alive in that situation. Unfortunately, since they worked so well in that situation, they got stuck on. And now, instead of you being in the context of normal life, with that switch on, that fight or flight switch still on, you're going to continue to respond as though you're in that situation.
Does it matter the length of time it's been from the trauma?
No.
Because I like us, well, Bill's Korea, and John and I are Vietnam. So is it the same time frame that you would work with us as, say, somebody from Afghanistan or the Iraq War or whatever? Would it be the same amount of time? Because it seems like to us guys, you know, it would be so much beat into us by this time, it would be harder to deal with that.
Sometimes it can be. It's not always. Everyone always responds differently. Let me use this example. If you were to be holding a bowling ball out at the end of your extended arm, that would be really, really heavy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you were to bring the bowling ball in towards your torso and hold it, it's much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what an imbalance or a trauma pattern in the brain is it's holding the bowling ball out at the end of your arm, and you don't want to actually be doing that.
Yeah.
Even though you've been doing it for 40 or 50 years, your brain would love to not have to do that anymore because it's a lot of effort to hold that ball out there. And so when this gives your brain the option of letting go of that ball, it does. It doesn't matter that it's holding it for 50 years. It's just as tired of holding it for 50 years as it was for holding it for 5 months.
Can I ask you another question about, is it the same program for men and women?
What we will find a lot of times is that a trauma pattern for women is more entrenched often than it is for men, and part of the reason for that has to do with the way men and women process information. A trauma pattern will, in a female, will often have more contextual components to it than it will for a man. We've all kind of heard about the men's brain is sort of compartmentalized, mm-hmm. and a woman's brain is sort of more like a pile of spaghetti than a waffle. That's an example that I've seen. Compartmentalized waffle versus
I'll never look at a woman again same way.
So, yeah, you follow one line of spaghetti, and you get onto another one, and another one, and another one, and that's kind of, you know.
Does it have anything to do with race?
We haven't found that at all. We haven't found that.
Because that, to me, is really interesting. And it would seem like these women, the women veterans, coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan right now, they're dealing with multiple problems, not just the combat, but also the sexual trauma that they're sure. that they're having to go through.
Sure.
And so can this program work two different traumas at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, that's why I mentioned the difference between men's and women's brains. With the little compartments, you have this is what happened to me, and here it is, and it's in its little box. But with the pile of spaghetti, you can see that all the spaghetti strings are touching each other, and a signal that would be traveling along one would go over here and there. And so it's just this big intermingled contextual pile. And mm-hmm. so when for women, typically a trauma pattern is going to impact a large amount of their life because it comes at it from all different angles. It's mm-hmm. not in a box. It's not contextualized in this little box. It's broad. It's spread out, and it impacts them. It comes in the front door, the back door, the windows. Mm-hmm. It's all over.
And it stays there forever.
And it does. And it's partly because it's in so many places. So mm-hmm. you know, you're trying to clean out something that's housed in many different places.
Mm-hmm. I'm John with Marvin Bill here on Veterans Voice on KBO 90.7 FM in Portland. And we are so glad that you tuned in today because our guest is Stacy Mullins with a very important topic of PTSD, which affects many and most of us veterans, but also a lot of other people from a lot of other situations. And so this is something that is very important, which Stacy allows me to segue, if you will, into having you talk a little bit about you are putting together a Sponsor a Vet program.
Right.
Would you please talk to this and explain that to us?
Sure. What we want to do is we want to be able to offer this service to vets. A lot of vets are not going to be able to pay the cost, which is $1,800 for the assessment and the 10 sessions. So that's the basic intensive package. And what we want to do is have the ability for individuals or corporate sponsors to sponsor a vet. And mm-hmm. how they would do that is they would either want to have a certain vet that they know of that they want to pay for or put money toward their sessions, or they can put money into a fund that will help defray the cost for, mm-hmm. you know, a vet that's, you know, in line on the waiting list or however we want to do that. And that's something I would like to talk with you guys about, sure. how to kind of get a list of people who want to get in that line. Because,
sounds good.
You know, we have to figure out some way to manage that. We can mm-hmm. we can do a certain number at a time and want to be able to have a way that people can schedule their time. You know, they're going to take off for work for a week. So there's a scheduling component to it and, you know, maybe having some way to work with you guys mm-hmm. In the vet community to have that list of people who are going to do it, and then also you know, compiling a list of people who, mm-hmm. who want to put money toward sponsoring of that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. And I think the program, especially that it's, you know, it's not drug
right,
drug-based.
Exactly. I mean, I will tell you this. Every day I talk to people, regular clients, from all walks of life who that's exactly the first comment that they have is, I don't want pharmaceuticals.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want the side effects.
Good for you.
I don't want to be dependent on this drug for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, all the rest. And that's where we're coming as a society in terms of how we look at our medical experience, and we don't want to be putting stuff in our bodies.
Because I know that through the veterans system that it's both one-on-one with a psychiatrist or it's group with a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. but it always involves drugs.
Right, right.
It always involves drugs.
And that's to settle down the things, you know, right. in some cases, to settle down the things that the talk therapy mm-hmm. is stirring up.
Right.
So.
Now, the sessions, are they group sessions or individual sessions?
No, individual sessions. Individual. Mm-hmm. So it's one person in a room by themselves with the trainer who mm-hmm. comes in, puts the sensors on, and then steps out. And then there's a video screen that the trainer is watching to actually see the brain patterns and monitoring what's going on. And then the person in the chair has a monitor that if they choose, they can watch as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see that at the beginning of the session, you know, here's what your brain pattern is looking like, and maybe it's, you know, the energy on the left side is really far dominant out to the side versus the energy on the right, and you can totally see that. And then by the end of the first session or the first protocol even, you can start to see, oh, look at that, it's coming more into balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can actually watch the progress on the screen of mm-hmm. what your brain is doing. You hear the difference in the tones, and then you can also see it on the screen.
Yeah, that sounds great. And what's the shortest amount of time that someone's had to go through it, and what's the longest amount of time is it taken someone?
What we consider the basic is 10 sessions. And the reason that we do 10 is that once the brain learns a new pattern, then we need to get it established as a dominant pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do a simulation experience
right.
and trying to learn something, you need to do it many times.
Yeah,
so we do
right.
that. The out distant number of
yeah.
sessions, I don't know that I know the maximum anyone's ever done. We generally say 5 to 30
mm-hmm.
as a rule. There's certain conditions that we do know because of how strongly rutted they are. Obsessive compulsive disorder is one that will generally take, you know, I've heard of 50 and 70 maybe.
Wow, really?
And that's for that reason. It's just there's so many different ruts.
Part of PTSD is that obsessive compulsion. That's definitely part of it.
It's definitely part of it. The trauma pattern isn't relived in the same way that an obsessive behavior is repeated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different in that regard, but there's definitely obsessive-compulsive components
of
PTSD because what are you trying to do? You're trying to avoid
right.
the thing that sets it off,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes the pattern. But once you take the thing that sets it off out of the equation, you don't need to do the things that you do to avoid the mm-hmm. thing that sets it off.
Right.
Tracy, is it akin to what I haven't heard the term used for a long time, but it was biofeedback.
Biofeedback.
Right, yeah. That is definitely when Lee Gerdes was developing this, biofeedback and neurofeedback were the beginning models that he used. And but then with those models, what they require is your conscious brain to interact with the software so that you're consciously trying to change things in your brain. And so that's where this is different.
Mm.
It starts in that place, but then it branches off into a completely different perspective
mm-hmm.
because it simply allows the brain to see itself and make its own corrections. So you're not spending your conscious effort trying to change something that's really housed in your unconscious mind.
Could it Is it like trying to break a habit or?
Exactly, yeah. So when you're trying to break a habit, you're trying to quit smoking, you're trying to quit drinking. Well, you know, how's that working for you?
Yeah.
Your conscious mind is not.
Yeah, how is that working
for you? How's that working, yeah. It's not, you know, the problem isn't in your conscious mind. The problem is in your subconscious mind.
Right,
yeah.
So if you can get to that level, then you can solve the problem.
Right. Stacy, I'm going to give out your web page.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also, do you want me to give out your office phone number?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's just do them in that order.
Okay.
So optimizeme-now.com.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the phone number is 503-844-4905.
Right. And we want to thank you for coming on and talk. This is very interesting. I think it'll do a lot of good. And what I will do is I will call you the first part of next week.
Okay.
And we can talk, and we'll, you know, work on how to get group, you know, businesses,
right,
or people who are interested in helping a vet,
right,
and to do that. And we'll work on that, because I think this is a really good idea,
right,
and I think it'll really be something that will help veterans.
Yeah, we want to, you know, and people who aren't veterans but they've got trauma experiences,
mm-hmm,
first responders,
right,
you know, all of the different things that we experience all the time. You know, we're all living in,
mm-hmm,
stressful situations that, mm-hmm, our brain is having to manage.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that the community should in some way be involved, because
absolutely.
Of course.
What we see, you know, the problems that are occurring to some of these, some fellows that are, and women that are coming back from these stressful situations,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't do the community any damn good.
No,
well,
it doesn't.
No.
And
mm-hmm.
in order to bring these people into some sort of sync, why...
Sure.
Would certainly benefit all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stacy, I want to thank you again, and I'll talk to you the first of next week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Oh, great. Thanks for listening to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM. We'll be back on April 16th at 9 a.m., and you can hear our older shows on www.kboo.fm/Veterans Voice. And please remember, don't trust anyone who is self-promoting or wrapped in the American flag. Peace be with you, and we'll see you next month. Thanks, Tammy, and thanks, Kathleen, and thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Yes, Tammy, thank you very much.
And Dorothy Ackerman, have a good day. Bye.